Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
QNL.
With guest co-hosts.
Alexander.
Carmandua.
K-Man Candy.
MMC.
Actually, what have we heard from? Oh, Alex and Lee, hello. Don't make me imitate your voices. I'm tempted.
They're blow over. Busy making out and can't talk.
Yes, because there's nothing like getting people in the mood than appearing on Polycast. It is time, in fact, for the quote-unquote real introduction to the show, and studies have shown that people are more likely to listen to Polycast by about 78% when we have a woman who does the introduction and or the closing to the show.
When did you make up this statistic?
He just completely pulled this out of his ass. Did no such study.
98% of statistics are made up. The other 10% are miscalculations.
Isn't this a new record? You've got three women on at the same time.
I think we've done this before. We've had...
Oh, that's right. You had the Christmas special.
Yeah.
Is this Dan's heart?
No, it is not.
Yes.
Certainly not.
I am K-Mad Candy, and I am here with Cartamandua.
Hi.
Alexander.
Mind the Gap.
MMC.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And Dan Q.
The silly crop has produced a bountiful harvest this year.
You invited us. And Makalua.
Who needs more caffeine to deal with this? The Cynic, we talked about if and when you should ever delete a unit.
In Forum Talk, we talked about Sonar as a promotion.
With a deviation into the research lab on merits and possibilities for the inclusion of a unit workshop, akin to that found in Alpha Centauri in the Civilization series.
Why there are no infantry unique units. And raising corporation headquarters city.
Then under the miscellaneous heading, considering the Civilization V soundtrack.
Welcome to the Senate, where we discuss game strategy.
When and if you should ever delete units, Penstar over on Symphonatics started this topic about units cost gold to maintain, to cost pretty much the same for about everybody, so when is stuff so obsolete that you think I should just delete this instead of upgrading it and that kind of thing. Here's an example. You've overexpanded and you're about to go on strike. There's a good time to start deleting units.
That is the most common time. I think another nice time is when you know, for instance, that your unit is going to die. Next turn, you just delete it rather than giving whatever that other civ is, be it an AI or a human, the satisfaction of destroying it.
And a promotion from killing it.
Exactly.
Or if you haven't bothered upgrading your city garrisons since you had archers and now you have rifles, I think you could just delete the archers.
Just build some new, or draft some new ones and delete the archers, yeah. Another thing is if you suddenly capture a large stack of workers for whatever reason, and you don't need that many workers, might get rid of a few and send the others off being busy, busy, busy.
You know, actually, workers would be one of the few units that even in that circumstance I would not delete, unless it was really, really late game, because I've micro'd them, I'll put them on automate, which is improved trade network, so then when railroads come around, away they go. And I think when you're talking about capturing lots of units for some reason, are you probably referring to like an AI's last city, are you?
Yeah, they stack them.
Or when you make the first move in the attack and they're going around with stacks of workers and you suddenly go, nom, and you realize, I don't need that many workers.
There's no such thing as too many workers.
I was about to say, I don't know if I could ever say that. There certainly is kind of a split in this thread in the sense of deleting a unit, whether you delete a unit because it's going to be too costly to upgrade, but then there's the consideration of the hereditary rule, government civic, which of course the plus one happy per unit, and if you're relying on that, then those obsolete units are great.
Once you're past that and you've got representation or beyond, then that's less of an issue.
Like universal suffrage, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when Dan can't get rid of that stack of warriors in his capital.
Sometimes if you've got a large enough stack of warriors, even against rifles, it's sometimes you just send them off against a city. You know they're going to die, but they might take a few with them.
Yeah, with the AI, they can be good cannon fodder, and you can send them on their way to get the AI to take their stack and go after it to kind of distract them.
Also, they might not kill the enemy AI, but as the AI rotates out to bring the strongest one to the front, you can at least beat down each one by a little bit before your warrior dies, and then you've got your stronger stack that comes in and mops up.
And I think with the thing about also, just to go back to the point Mackie said at the beginning about, you know, it looks like you're going to be going on strike if you don't delete those warriors. Either that or with the warriors, I know like with warriors for myself, barbarians are enabled and they usually are in my game. I'm doing a lot of the spawn busting. And of course, the spawn busting, the units are usually outside of your territory. But I often forget as my empire is expanding to move them to continue to do that or it's no longer necessary. And at times you may find that, oh, that warrior that's been sitting there for hundreds, maybe thousands of years, all I can do this turn is I can move him into my borders and you will lessen, not remove that maintenance cost. And or if you're noticing, for instance, that you've got some unhappiness in cities and you're not able to work some tiles because citizens are unhappy and they're not working, if you can get that warrior into the city back to the hereditary rule so that you can then be working another tile, then perhaps that will resolve your potential strike issue, because even at 0%, you're going to be losing money. Just for our listeners wondering, how do you get into this strike situation? Usually from overexpansion, but it can also happen if you especially defy Apostolic Palace resolutions. Alki had said that I often use Great Merchant's Gold as a way to upgrade my whole army in one turn. That can be fun. However, you'd probably have to have successive Great Merchant missions to get enough gold to upgrade potentially all of the warriors you have in one turn. It also depends on the era. Like a warrior to an infantry unit, that can get expensive.
Yeah, you know, it's really easy to upgrade when you don't have a stack of doom to also upgrade.
Forwards, bring back Leonardo's workshop.
Yes.
Well, if people are pining for Leonardo's workshop and don't want to go back to Civilization 2, you could go over to the console world and buy Civilization Revolution.
But that only works once.
Once is better than none.
This is Forum Talk, where we investigate hot Civ issues in the forums.
Well, heck, I'd like to see them implement something like Alpha Centauri's customizable units, like where you've discovered the weapon.
Definitely.
And so you equip whatever weaponry you want on the soldier, and then it tells you what you have. Like, I don't know, you discover the rifle, and so then you can go to all of your musketeers and retrofit them with rifles.
Using the promotion system, mixed units as well would be interesting. So
absolutely.
It'd also be historically accurate, because you'd have, say, your musket, but occasionally the sharpshooters within that unit would be carrying rifles.
Yeah.
At the period of transition. So you'd have a couple of riflemen as snipers backing up the rest of the unit of musketmen.
Or you could have the elite units that use all sorts of weaponry, like the Persian Immortals were famous for having multiple things. I mean, they'd have their bows and their arrows, but they'd also have swords, but they'd also have spears. They could do whatever that you need them to do.
Well, and of course, you've got the modern commandos that pretty much use anything they can get their hands on.
Oh, yeah.
Kill you with your own table.
Yeah.
So this latest discussion of Swiss Army knife units, I don't know if you did it purposely or it was incidentally, but I think that is an excellent segue to sonar as a promotion in Civilization 5, because the Alpha Centauri...
Yeah, that was mentioned in that thread, the Alpha Centauri version.
Since kind of stepping on Mackie's shoes here, because it really was her turn to choose a topic.
No, go ahead.
I better introduce this topic and I better do it well. Thread started by Mega Bears fan over on the 2K forums. Anyone else think that equipping a ship with sonar should be a promotion instead of a characteristic of the unit itself? The reason I bring this up is it's kind of unfair that destroyers can automatically see submarines, since destroyers are usually acquired before submarines. Thus, subs are almost useless before you can rarely, if ever, build them before somebody else already has something to counter them. I think there should be a technology for sonar. Once this technology has been researched, it should unlock submarines as a unit, and the sonar and depth charge promotions, where destroyers by default should not be able to see the submarines. Instead, any naval unit can be promoted with the sonar ability, allowing them to see submarines, and then additionally, the sonar tech could allow a depth charge promotion, which could give a large bonus to attacking against submarines. So this way, if you research sonar before everything else, and you build a bunch of them, they will actually be extremely potent and powerful, much like the German U-boats were, even if the enemy already has destroyers.
I don't know. With this idea, I think I'd rather have the ability to upgrade my units with different kinds of equipment rather than skills. Or maybe, you know, you could have a few of the skill sets.
Very much, yeah. That goes back to the Alpha Centauri style up designing units and upgrading units, doesn't it?
Yeah, and so it wouldn't just be the weaponry.
In some respects, that's what the promotions were supposed to be.
In Civ 4.
Supposed to be a form of that system back.
Yeah, it just, you didn't get the feel of it as much, I thought.
Yes, you had the weapons and you had the base units and Alpha Centauri. You also had the equipment, which included the extra moves. I think there was a healing one, there was a poison unit one or something, and things like that.
For Alpha Centauri there were, yeah.
You could design units to fight mind worms, which I guess would be kind of equivalent to this, sort of.
Submarines or mind worms. I do agree that the argument that you don't automatically get sonar, you have to develop the technology. The ships are still pretty powerful and pretty good at what they do, they just get more features later on.
Or if you were comparing this to, like, missile technology, where you can shoot your missiles, but you have to do the Manhattan Project before you can stick a nuclear warhead in them.
Well, but you could have, yeah, the sonar device as a wonder or something. Similar to radar was a big game-winning technology during World War II, wasn't it?
Yeah, those should be things that you can develop and then upgrade your units with, I think.
Notice he's got a note. Subs should automatically start with sonar promotion. Makes sense that they're underwater, they need to be able to see where they're going.
Yeah.
But ineligible for the depth charge promotion, which, if you want to be strict to the terms, would be understandable. But what about high-yield torpedoes and things like that? Although you could argue that the torpedoes are part of the basic attack feature of a submarine.
Well,
having a promotion to upgrade that.
Well, you could always do the promotions later on that you've researched tech such and such, so now you can upgrade your submarines with this feature, which becomes available.
And also, it'd be interesting to see having the sonar ability, not just all naval units, but have the option of building aircraft, an AWACS-style aircraft that carries sonar.
Sure. You don't need a nuclear sub, a regular sub. You just are able to upgrade them with different features to customize them.
Well, in some respects, you could have your basic warrior unit from the very beginning, going to a more broader thing. You upgrade him by adding weapons to him, and that's how you get your axeman, your rifleman, your maceman, whatever, but he's still a warrior. Perhaps you rename him based on the era, not on the tech.
Yeah.
So there's as you get to modern age, you get a soldier, and then as you get to the future, you might get a commando or marine unit.
I could see that. I mean, in the ancient era, you know, you have your warriors or your warband or whatever you want to call them, and then whatever you equip them with is what they become.
On this particular point, I find myself going back and forth between the idea of just like a base unit and then the promotions for the customization, like the promotion system in Civ 4, but even more so like the Alpha Centauri system. And those people who argue that, no, you should still have these separate classes of units that we saw in some earlier Civ titles, for example, like Civ 3, I think.
They all had different types of subs. Because I know even Civ 2 had regular subs, then you had nuclear subs. And Civ 4 has the same, Civ 3. Because you had the regular subs were just normal attack subs, sort of World War II era subs. Then you had your nuclear subs, which could carry missiles, nuclear missiles, once you had the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, you had a lot of duplicate units. Like, Beyond the Sword added TAC nukes, so you had ICBMs and surface-to-air missiles and TAC nukes.
It's interesting that the people in this thread, for example, that are really on the historical accuracy, some people want to see this versatility, like this opening poster said he did a lot of comparison to what happened in real life. And then there are also those people who say, no, there should be the different classifications of things because of, in real life, the first submarine, not only was it not as powerful, but there was a different purpose behind it as compared to the submarines that you would then see in World War II.
Well, even in World War II, most submarines could hide for a short period, but most of the time they were still surface boats that could hide themselves if they were in danger of being detected. It wasn't until the Germans came along with the snorkel that they could actually go underwater for long periods and actually become predators.
Come on into the research lab where we explore concepts that are not in Civ yet, but maybe in the future.
We've talked about the Alpha Centauri system here, and I didn't play much of Alpha Centauri myself.
Heathen.
I had my teeth hooked into Civ 2, but also it was just how, by default, how dark things were on the screen. But I still value what Alpha Centauri had in a lot of respects. And so, for those wondering, this Alpha Centauri system was described in a separate thread on 2K. It was actually linked to by Stepan. For those who have played more of Alpha Centauri, I think this is a reasonable description, the little that I remember. So instead of a single technology equaling a new unit, Alpha Centauri did it a little differently. We've heard that a new technology unlocking of a new platform, and if I recall correctly, Galactic Civilizations from Stardock is similar in this respect, too.
You didn't unlock units, you unlocked components of units, which you then built up blueprints and built up your own combinations from that.
And it would provide a new name for the unit based on what you'd upgraded, and you could even customize that yourself if you preferred.
Stepa says, in Civ terms, this would be a person on foot, a person on horseback, cannon, etc. Each platform had 5 or 6, he says, if memory serves, slot that could be updated, such as a weapon, armor, power unit, like health or special abilities, amphibious, and so on. In Civ terms, as you progress up through the text, your infantry get better weapons and armor, which what Alex and Stuart have been talking a lot about. But Stepa says, my point is that there has been no apparent widespread desire to see something like that in Civ, other than the special ability upgrades we've seen in the last couple of iterations, promotions. I wonder about that because I thought AC's approach allowed for remarkable diversity in strategy. And Slow Target says he doesn't think it works for Civilization, but it was because, quote, people ended up continually making the same units, thus eroding most of the fun of having flexibility, quote unquote. I'm not entirely sold on having something like Alpha Centauri, but if the reason for not having it is because of how people used it, then I think it's more of a question of tweaking the system itself so it's not people ending continually making the same things. In Civilization 4, you do have the ability to get some new promotions when you get a particular technology. Gunpowder, for instance, you now get the pinch promotion for mounted units, for example, first thing that comes to mind. But to me, there needs to be at some point where there's like restrictions on the type of promotions an older unit can get, so it could get upgrades through a combination of technology and also through successful combat performance. Then it's like, okay, we've done as much as we can with this unit through technology and through its own ability in battle, just this kind of gameplay balance to the realism thing. Then if you want to go beyond that, you need this next classification. But that tricky balance is, of course, so that you don't end up with half a dozen different types of the same thing, because I think that throws not only long-standing players off, but also makes it more complicated for newer people looking to come into the game.
One thing I'd say is the Alpha Centauri system, although when you research a new tech, it would give you a couple of basic blueprints automatically based on what other technologies you already had. You had to get a new unit. You had to design your blueprint to get it how you wanted. Then you had to build your prototype, which was more expensive. Then you built the units regularly. And also, you had only so many blueprints. You could upgrade the blueprint to a new unit, and that would upgrade all your units of one type to another. But it got rather complicated, whereas what might work better would be an amalgam between the Alpha Centauri method and the Civilization Promotions method, where you could build your basic unit. It's a basic unit wandering around in the world, it's already built, and then you give it the weapons, give it the armour, to make it into your own thing. You don't worry about blueprints. You just promote it into what type of unit you need it to be. You're promoting it to a rifleman, promoting it to a machine gunner, etc., etc.
You've got, like, you've discovered feudalism. You now can access chainmail.
Yeah.
And so you go in and you find your old swordsmen and you equip them now with chainmail. And so now they're medieval swordsmen or something.
It was a good idea with having to build a prototype, but then again, you can just make it the first units you upgrade their equipment on. The upgrade is slightly more expensive and then gets cheaper later on.
I don't think you'd even need it like a prototype for most of the Civ stuff because it's just infantry and cavalrymen for most of the game.
Yeah. You could limit the prototypes to weapons or something.
Or giant death robots in the game.
You limit it to the weapons, whereas the armor, you don't have to worry about prototyping. The other features like having a medic unit, having a recon unit that can camouflage themselves, hide in the undergrowth and things like that, those sorts of promotions, those don't need prototypes, but the weapons need prototypes because you don't want to blow up in the face of the unit that's using them.
Well, like if you had cannons, for example, you know, the first ones you get might be those primitive early medieval ones that tended to blow up in your face and
yeah.
accidentally kill your unit. So you could go through a sort of technological development with more advanced weaponry where you discover what doesn't work.
Actually, if you built a new unit to take advantage of this new technology and gave him a hand cannon, then you have a small chance of the cannon blowing up and killing that unit. However, if you took your most experienced unit and gave him a new weapon, he's got his experience behind him to know when it might blow up, and that will lessen your chance of killing him.
Sure.
And then once you, say, had 5 turns with a unit that hasn't killed himself, then the chance is gone forever. You can start giving it out to all your units.
Something like that, yeah. A lot of that stuff would have to happen behind the lines, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably need a lot of balance, but it would certainly be interesting to think about, if nothing else.
Yeah, a lot of default automation as well, just for people who are just like, oh, just let the game make a lot of these decisions.
Yeah, because there was a lot of people who played Alpha Centauri that just used the default units.
Yeah.
So, say, you've gained access to the mace. You can just start building macemen, or you can go through and retrofit all your swordsmen with maces, or you can customize so that you have a unit with a sword and a mace, or whatever you want to do.
A sword and a mace, so perhaps the sword has one bonus, the mace has a different bonus, and the bonuses are halved if he's got both, but he has both types of bonus. Like the sword might be better against infantry, the mace is better against a unit on horseback, because you can whack it and knock him off the horse, for example.
Something like that, yeah.
So you've got those two bonuses, but the bonuses, are maybe the actual values are halved, because he's got both.
To prevent uberness.
Yeah.
So, like, with the Persian Immortals that I mentioned earlier, got bows, spears, and swords, but they don't get as big of bonuses.
They're not specialized in any specific one, but they are very versatile.
Yeah.
You got breadth of skills, not depth.
Yeah.
Or you get a limited amount that you can make as well, or something like that, since they're so elite.
Yeah, well, so that's why you could have a unique base unit. So you could have a unit as well as just a unique weapon. So you'd have your unique unit, which, instead of carrying 2 weapons, can carry 3, for example.
Sure.
I think that is actually playing in very well to Pro Cylon's post in this thread. By your command. Which he's saying that a good compromise to all this would be if you allowed basically to create 2 to 3 of your own unique units every era that you have to stick with once you have designed them. He says, I think this will work a lot better in a game like Civ since it has many trade-offs. Unique bomber and unique battleship, or unique tank and unique submarine. Decisions like that make for some very different wars.
Yeah, using the blueprint system or the promotion system, you design your unique unit, you lock that down, and then you can quickly produce those cheaply, and they're automatically promoted up to the unique unit level, but you're locked at that as your unique unit. You making it unique makes it cheaper for you to produce that type of unit.
But you've used up one of your unique slots.
Yeah, what was that? But the thing is, because you custom design it, another player could custom design the same unit. But if you've declared it as your unique unit, it makes it more expensive for them and cheaper for you to produce that, perhaps.
Another advantage of this system would also be that the game could recognize certain units that you've produced as unique units, or at least give them like a unique name. So you don't just have each Civ having 1 or 2 unique units, because the game is recognizing several of the things that you've produced with unique names. So like German tanks, you get the Panzers, but then like your knights, you could get Teutonic knights if you equip them with the right combination of equipment.
Like in RPGs where you get set bonuses if you've got all armor from the same set.
So, like, if your German knight is equipped with a lance and a certain kind of armor and some other item and some skill, congratulations, you've unlocked Teutonic Knight.
Yeah.
By this combination.
And because of that, yeah, he gets the set bonus and the unique bonus on top of his regular bonus, but...
That's very complex, though, so it would probably need to be streamlined.
Yeah. So I suppose that goes back to the, you don't unlock the unique unit, you unlock the unique weapon or unique armor, and so you can build regular chainmail macemen, or you can have something else. You can have splintmail, but creates a unique unit by adding those two combinations.
Well, and there would be different strategy behind it. So, like, you've unlocked chainmail, but it's more expensive than the, I don't know, the leather armor that you've been using up to this point or whatever. And so you can continue to use the older weapons and armor for cheaper units, but they won't gain the bonuses from the new stuff if you want.
Of course, you'd have things obsoleting after a while, but they're not automatically obsoleted when you get a new tech.
Yeah.
It'll be 3 or 4 techs down the line.
Yeah, absolutely.
So leather armor would be obsolete by the time you've got modern reactive nanoweave armor or whatever. But
yeah,
when you've got your chainmail and your plate mail, it's not obsolete yet. Leather armor for the cannon fodder is still...
viable.
Yeah.
Dan is skeptical.
No, what I was thinking first off, especially the difference in the technology, it made me think of the Civilization Daydreams comic by Tim Buckley with the guy with the sword, and he sees someone with, it's like a marine with a gun. He's like, well, that's a funny looking sword. What do you think you're going to be able to do with that? And then he finds out it's a lot better than a sword. But one of the things that I liked, for example, with Beyond the Sword was the ability, in addition to random personalities, was the unrestricted leaders, in the sense that, okay, civilization for some people is about recreating history. And that's where you get into the scenarios and some of the more specialized mod packs. To me, reimagining history. So instead of just Egypt having those war chariots, Spain should have them, or Korea, or whatever. And so now, especially when we're talking about pro-Cylon's suggestion of having like 2 or 3 unique units, this is just taking it to a more extreme, where if you knew, for example, that Egypt had a war chariot, then if you had enough contact, enough exposure to Egypt, then why couldn't, say, another civilization also be able to design their own war chariot, but at the same time have some sort of restriction, some sort of variation, so it wasn't quite exactly the same, so then perhaps you don't get into the same problem with the criticism about the Alpha Centauri unit builder, which is everybody just ends up building the same darn thing, because they are the ones that are the most powerful.
Liking your idea there, it sounds a lot like cultural diffusion to me, where, like, the Greeks are coming along with their hoplites or phalanxes or whatever. People are like, hey, this is a good idea. And then you can create a unit that uses that fighting style, but uses the weapons of the local culture or whatever. Or, like, different civilizations that tried to copy the Roman legion in one form or another, where they're trying to copy the weaponry or whatever the unit has, but they're doing it in their own way.
I'm just having this vision of Mega Bears fan perhaps listening to this podcast, and he's kind of like, how did you guys start on sonar promotions and like...
Yeah.
Why is there no infantry unique unit?
Because nobody bothered to go through and check.
Well, there's also no longbow unique unit either.
That's true.
I thought there was.
No, there is now in Civ 5, but not in Civ 4. Where the guy's talking plasma cannon, I think that those units are the common equalizing units of their time. The game is saying that by the time longbows are invented, pretty much everyone could use them relatively equally, so there's no one empire with a huge advantage there. I would disagree with that, because having experienced what it takes to do with a longbow, those are actually much bigger. I mean, when you hear the word longbow, you just think of a bow that is long, you know, as opposed to a crossbow. But a longbow is actually nearly like twice the size of a regular bow of that fashion. And so it takes a lot of skill. It takes about 10 years of practice.
And also it's the culture behind the training as well, which is what would make it unique to some cultures.
Well, essentially it was unique to the different cultures in the British Isles, whether it's English or Welsh.
There was actually, it used to be a law in England where every Sunday, every man capable of bearing arms had to practice longbow training.
Well, it's because it was so effective militarily.
Initially, when I read the thread about why there's no infantry unique unit, my knee-jerk reaction was, well, it's a later game unit.
Well, the Americans have Navy SEALs instead of Marines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't any later-era unique units.
The first unique unit potential idea that comes to mind for infantry would be the American GI, because GI is general infantry, isn't it?
Then how would that be unique if it's general infantry?
Haha. But it's the American GIs. It stands out. That's American.
Unique to America.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to that thing that they don't want to waste the unique unit on something late in the game that nobody's going to use. But then if you have multiple unique units, like in Civ 5, that's no longer a problem.
Yeah.
But yeah, Civ 4, that was definitely a problem where, oh, I've just barely gotten my unique unit and now the game is over and I can't use it.
Although it does, for people playing America, they want to beeline to the end of the game, get a unique unit, and just about the same time that everyone else gets their unique units, and so your unique unit is so much more powerful than everyone else.
Well, and now with the Americans, they have Minutemen. So you're in your 16, 1700s with a unique unit instead of having to wait all the way until the end of the game for your bomber, the other American unique unit.
In addition to the part about the later game issue in terms of gameplay, in terms of having a unique unit, not as many in the later game because it's less likely that people are going to get to it, but also if you look at really the realism argument in terms of the civilizations that are included, their unique unit, their unit that whatever period of time really stood out as an advantage over anybody else in their immediate vicinity came before, sometime before, in a lot of cases, infantry. So in realism sense, well, it also makes sense that we don't have as many modern era or even industrial era unique units as, say, we do ancient, classical, medieval. But it is interesting, especially when Aunt Jemima, I love your maple syrup, who started this trend, and now I want pancakes. Thanks a lot. Listing all of the unique units and what it's replacing and the hole for both infantry and longbowmen, I never really thought about it before when it was presented like that. I was just kind of like, huh. I guess maybe it also goes back to when we're talking about, okay, let's not think about this is the civilization. Let's try to find a civilization where you could have a unique unit for infantry. You're thinking about maybe the realistic, the historical timeline when that unit appeared. Okay, what was the equivalent, the general equivalent of other civilizations around it, either at the time or when that civilization itself got to that level of technology, if there was a slight difference?
I think also with the infantry, it's just a matter of the fact that by that era, communication had become so advanced that everybody was using the same form of technology. World War II, there really isn't that much difference between an American with a gun and a helmet and a German with a gun and a helmet. Japanese guy with a gun and a helmet.
Well, the salute would be different.
Well, but the way the unit functions, you know, they're all infantry.
Yeah, although it was very much the American whole GI standard brought out the whole concept of you just have your standard infantry unit. They got standard issue weapons, standard issue armor, standard training, rather than having one unit specializing in one thing, another unit specializing in another thing. You just have your generic infantry that just goes out there and fights. And it was the GIs that were one of the pioneers of that concept in modern warfare.
And that's where you get the whole idea of this modern infantry unit.
My opinion, that would be the argument for making the GI as a unique unit because they were the first.
I guess.
Whereas everyone else just gets the copy.
That's getting back into the whole cultural diffusion idea where everybody else is copying what one civ does.
Yeah.
Raising Corporation Headquarters City in Beyond the Sword, the end result is similar to if you raise a holy city with some notable differences. You do not get a diplo hit for raising a city because it happened to be a corporation headquarter. Like, you will get raising city negative anything, but then if it happens to be a holy city, you get...
You're dead.
You get another negative modifier, but nobody seems...
You're dead. But hey, you raise a corporation, nobody cares.
Just like you don't lose the religion if you lose the holy city, except that, as was pointed out, you lose the benefit of the headquarters. Just like you would lose the benefit, not the holy city, but if you had the shrine, in addition to having the city that was the holy city, the person who had that shrine will now lose the benefit of that if it was in that city, because you cannot build the shrine again, just like you cannot, let's have a new holy city. So I guess it really depends if you are taking a city and it happens to be the headquarters for a corporation. Depends on the circumstance. You may think twice about raising it if it is a corporation that is well spread and it's like, well, I wouldn't have built that corporation, I wouldn't have spread it, but I would still like benefits for it.
I guess there's really no modern comparison to this thing. We haven't ever had a city be raised that was the headquarters of a corporation.
No, we have not.
But when you consider that in Civ, the mechanism is the same as a holy city, it's just corporations as modern religions.
Yes, the mechanics are similar, except that I would distinguish between the two in the sense that you don't adopt that corporation. It's not has the same entrenched ideological connection as then say, okay, so now we've got the holy city for this religion, we're going to adopt this as the state religion, we now define ourselves by that.
Instead of having a state...
religion, you have a state corporation?
That's called communism.
Not necessarily communism, because you've got things like the BBC is a state corporation.
That's true.
In Civ, instead of having a state corporation, you have one corporation per city with some corporations. If you put offices of one corporation in a city, it wipes out one of the others. Some of them can overlap, but not, for example, Mining Inc. and one of the others, they wipe each other out, don't they?
Yeah, Mining Corporation and Creative Constructions, and if you want to do that corporation takeover in the city, I don't know what percentage is, but it costs you more to be able to do that than to just put a corporation in a city that doesn't have any corporation.
But that's no real difference between when you've got the more religions in the city, the less likely you're going to succeed.
Yes, but at the very least, when excessive religion actually gets into a city, it doesn't bump the other out.
No.
Listen to the Civ 5 soundtrack, because it sounds cool. I checked it out a little bit.
Yeah, it was actually released by Jeff Knorr from Firaxis on his website in the middle of August. I was actually surprised they were releasing that much, the full versions, and more than a full month ahead of release. The opening menu theme reminds me more of a 19th century orchestral piece as opposed to the more understandably gospel sound of Baba Yetu of Civilization IV. I like the Civ 5 theme. I like Baba Yetu more, but I still like what I heard.
Yeah, it seems like it fits a lot with the whole Art Deco artistic scheme.
Yeah, definitely. So, although you said 19th century, you could push it forward to 1920s sort of era, which would fit with some of the rest of the theme of the game.
Yes.
And some of the lighter pieces look more jazzy from that era as well.
Sure.
Well, what does really show up in this music, though, is the fact that it's actually been done by an orchestra.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Prague Philharmonic for some of it, and sampled instrument orchestra, and which is presumably a studio-based orchestra. I noticed also on the same website there are unreleased music, which is not being used in games, but it's generic area-related.
And specifically this unreleased music, he's also indicated that this was composed for Firaxis.
Mm.
It's not yet used in the game. And it actually looks like this is his first music for a game.
Yeah, it looks like it's portfolio stuff that they can use. This is the idea we're going for in this game, and then they can go and get a longer, more professional piece developed from an orchestra or something.
I was actually pretty thrilled when I saw that they were going to be doing the regional soundtracks. That was something that I had been advocating for a while, and so it was very reassuring to see that they had decided to do that. So that, you know, when you're on the different kind of regional turf, you're going to get a different ambiance, which is pretty neat, I think. Or like if you're playing as Egypt, you'll get more Middle Eastern stuff than if you're playing as China, where you get the Far Eastern stuff, and so forth.
Hmm. And you know, this unreleased music had me think of some of the music from Civilization III. Not necessarily the style of music, but the fact that it was by region, because we know that with Beyond the Sorb, that included a lot of the Civ III music, which is one of my favorite things about Civilization III, actually.
The music?
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually says on his bio that he joined Firaxis in 2008. I'm quoting, "It's his first experience working in the video game industry besides doing a vocal score transcription of Civ 4 Beyond the Sword." That was quite the tall order, I think, especially on the heels of Baba Yetu from Christopher Tin.
Yeah.
As Dan mentioned, I think Baba Yetu really set the bar very high for Civ soundtracks. So I guess I wouldn't expect him to be able to top it right from the start, but I think he's done a very good job, all things considered, based on what I've heard.
It definitely stands up well along with the rest of the music in Civ 4. Baba Yetu on its own probably still is the top in my book.
Yeah.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
You can Skype us at The Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Dumb knock jokes that make your nose bleed. First off, the marketing, I was like, I'm clicking on that thread. I want my nose to bleed. I have to say, the only ones that I really liked were in the opening post.
Let me guess, because this one involves whatcha.
Part of it, I love saying that word. I'm so going to use that one, though. Knock, knock, who's there? Whatcha. Whatcha who? Whatcha doing? I'm so going to use that in our weekly game. But I also like the Pakal one, too. Knock, knock, who's there? Pakal. Pakal who? Pakal your bags and get out.
But some of those on there were just dreadful.
Dumb.
What's actually really nice about this episode is that even though we had two regular co-hosts away, we actually had two former regular co-hosts to be on. So I kind of like how that worked out. Kelly?
Yeah?
Has Polycast changed any? Is this just like how you remember it, for better or worse?
It's changed some, but it's still cool.
It was better before, but it's okay now. But she's saying it was better when she was on than it is.
Yes, it is minus me, therefore it's less awesome.
To you, Annalie, is it just like old times?
It is. It doesn't even feel like there's been a gap, actually. I'm just like, oh, I'm just picking up as regular. Thank you for listening. We've had with us Daniel Quick.
As always.
K-Mag Candy.
Bye.
Makalua.
Bye.
MMC.
Time to go into hiding.
Alexander.
You lose, you get nothing.
And myself, Cardamandua.
I don't even have to ask who did that.
I don't either. Hello, Stuart.
Hello.
Yeah, you know how frustrating it was to have to just take Dan Q when Dan Q is awesome was already taken? Just like crap.
All right, come on. Introduction. Don't let Dan get off on a tangent.
Seriously, he does that.
I know.
Welcome to Polytangent.
Now that would be great if there was actually a real dance and they called it Blue Squiggle. I'm not sure I'd want to see it, but I'd like to hear about it.
Anything like the hamster dance?
I hope not.
Or safety dance?
Safety dance.
Can go where we want to. I'm behind. If you have friends, no friends of mine. Sorry, I said Greg Knorr, and it's actually Jeff. Oops.
Jeff with a G, though, right?
Yes, Jeff with a D.
Good job, Dan. Good job.
Jeff with a D, D-J-E-F-F, Jeff.
The D is silent. Okay, thank you. You may now introduce the topic.
I thought I just did.
Oh, you gotta talk about who the opening poster is, what the opening poster is saying.
I have to read the thread for that.
Oh no, Size has to read? But I'm on the interwebs.
No, it's interwebs.
Eyes can't has text.
Interweb tubes.
The inner tubes.
Too long didn't read.
Yeah, that pretty much sums up the internet.
Because, there's that whole part there that I missed of what you had been saying.
That's going to sound great in post-production. People are like, how come people aren't listening to half of what they're saying? What a bunch of jerks. He just said that. Well, hello, why are you repeating it in different words? Geez, Stuart, you and your conspiracy theories.
You have discovered conspiracy theories.
Or have you? Most of the noise from the dog actually happened when other people were speaking, so the dad can edit that out.
Oh, at first I thought you were saying, most of the squeaking occurred when I wasn't talking, and Dan can just edit everybody else out.
Well, that's it.
Man, does somebody have to be voluntold?
Yeah, I already did one.
Everyone, well, except Alex, since he's AFM, away from microphone. Ooh, it's my new acronym. I'm trying to spread it around.
AFS, away from sanity.
I'm permanently there.
Record date?
September 11th, 2010.
Civilization 4, Warlords, and Beyond the Sword sound clips. Copyright Take 2 Interactive.
Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.